Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today. We'll be talking vegetables on this edition of Garden Talk and maybe a little about flowers as well with Dick Zondag. Dick is president of the 111-year-old Jung Seed Company. He helps manage 5 Jung Garden Centers and the Jung Seed and Plant Catalogs. You may have some questions, maybe about the catalogs, maybe about the vegetables, maybe some flower questions as well. Love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. And Dick Zondag, welcome back. Great
to
have
you.
Yeah, it's great to have you back.
Nice to be back.
Jung's been around for 111 years. Give us a little of the history of that.
Okay, well, the company was started by my grandfather back in 1907. Well, it actually goes farther back than that because he came from a family of 11 kids, and his assignment was the vegetable garden. And in those days, back in the late 1800s, there weren't seed companies around to buy your seeds from, so they had an area in the garden that they raised the seeds for the next year and an area in the garden for the produce. And so he actually learned the business from his mother, and he carried that on. When he graduated from Randolph High School, he went to Oshkosh Business School and then apprenticed at a small company in Rockford, Illinois, called the Buckbee's Seed Company. And it's kind of come full circle because Buckbee's was bought out by R.H. Shumway, and we own R.H. Shumway now. R.H. Shumway is our heirloom catalog, and so kind of come full circle. But then he, after a year and a half of apprenticing there, he came back to Randolph and started the business in earnest, and first started on a two-room building on the farm about 5 miles south and west of Randolph. And then in the early 1900s, he came in and bought a shop on the main drag and started the company in earnest. And through a couple of moves, moved into the old Randolph Alton Opera House, and it was a three-story wood frame building, and Grandpa liked printing, and so he had a printing press where printed his own catalog, and actually we printed part of the catalog up until 1988 in Randolph. But in the early 50s, I think it was 1951, I can just barely remember that night, the building was hit with lightning and burned to the ground.
Oh.
And it kind of forced him to look at what he was going to do, and so he bought some property on the edge of Randolph and started to build there. And it was kind of a blessing in disguise because it moved us to the edge of town where downtown Randolph was, he was kind of surrounded by residences. And it's just kind of grown from there. So,
oh, man. It's a wonderful, wonderful story. Did you always plan to be in the family business?
You know, Larry, when I was growing up, you know, my dad was in the business and my two uncles were in the business, and we had to start out like everybody else with a hoe in our hands, and the hoe never fit my hands very well. And so when I graduated from Randolph High School, I played a little basketball there and went off to a small school in Michigan, Hope College, and spent 2 years there, probably looking at chemistry and mathematics rather than horticulture, but decided that wasn't what I wanted to do. And then I moved to Madison, to the University of Wisconsin, and took a couple courses in horticulture, and that kind of steered me in the direction that I went. So after getting my master's degree at Cornell University in horticulture, I moved back to Randolph and kind of moved up through the ranks to started out in the nursery and then kind of took over the cataloging after my dad retired, and now I have 3 sons that are in the business, and they're starting to think that dad should take a back seat. So it's good to get family in there. So that'll be the fourth generation of seed company ownership. So
that is absolutely wonderful story. What's the best part of your job?
Oh, I love working in the greenhouse. You know,
yeah.
I still do a few things. I manage the mailing lists for all the 8 different catalogs that we have. You know, I do those mailing lists. But Nathan, my number two son, but number three child, is kind of taking over the day-to-day operations in Randolph, and that gives me the opportunity to go out to the greenhouse and bother them out there, I guess.
And you are going to be at Garden Expo on Saturday, and you're speaking at in the afternoon.
Yeah, I think it's at 2 something.
2:15 and 3:15, yep. Back to back.
Yeah, what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk a little bit on, you know, how to start seeds, how to improve your soil for vegetable gardening, and then I have a list of all the vegetables that are main categories of vegetables, and I'll be going over the varieties that I would use in my own garden if I planted them all. I wouldn't have enough room for all of them, but the vegetable varieties that I would use and why they're good, and a little bit about each of the vegetables. You know, we'll start out with asparagus and end with watermelons, and a little bit about each and what things you should look for and what kind of soil they like and the fertility levels that you should maintain, and stick a little bit in there about the square foot gardening that I do with carrots and onions and some of the things. And I also started about 6 or 8 years ago straw bale gardening, which is really
I'm into
a nice
that
way
too.
Of doing.
Yeah, it's really a lot of fun.
Oh, I love it. You know, I tried it way back when I first graduated from the Cornell University and didn't have much luck, but the whole secret behind straw bale gardening is the initial loading of it with nutrients and getting those bales to start composting. So when you plant the plants in there, they have some nutrients to work on. And, you know, it's really a great way of taking a spot if you don't have good soil, or if you want to grow some things that you can train on a fence. They put the bales at the base of the fence. I'm kind of a lazy gardener because you have to keep watering those bales almost on a daily basis, and so I have a watering time clock, so I just set that, and then I don't have to worry about the watering. I just fertilize once in a while, and then all of a sudden the tomatoes and the peppers and the cucumbers and broccoli and everything else start coming, and my wife tells me I can only plant 2 or 3 different tomato plants because we have plenty of canned tomatoes and salsa and all that sort of stuff in the basement already.
You know, that we have 5 pairs of tickets for Garden Expo, and anybody who calls and has a question, you have to call with a question for Dick. We'll get you hooked up with a pair of those tickets. Jane Rotunda, our producer today, will be taking some information from you, and then you can pick them up at the will call when you arrive at Garden Expo. So first 5 callers, or the first 5 who want the tickets, certainly, and have a question, we'd certainly love to hear from you. And the number to call, by the way, is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. And, you know, let's take a call. Thomas in Manitowoc, it's your turn. Hi, Tom. Thank you for calling.
Hello, Dick. I wanted to know, there's a new variety of asparagus that I saw advertised in the catalog.
Yeah, it's called Millennium.
Okay. It was stating that it would outproduce all other asparaguses. What is your opinion on that? Have you tried it?
Yes, the Millennium is a male-dominant variety of asparagus. You know, asparagus is unlike most vegetable plants, it has male and female plants on separate plants. And so with the asparagus, you want to get mostly male plants, because if you think about it, the female plants produce the seed, and once a plant starts producing seed, it stops producing roots and everything else, it throwing all of its resources into growing the seed. And so if you have a male-dominated plant population, you know, they do the pollinating, but once they've got that done, then all they really have to do is grow on. And so with a little fertility and watering, if it gets really dry, those male plants really grow much faster and will give you spears much earlier. With asparagus, what we usually tell people is if the asparagus spears are smaller than the diameter of your little finger, you probably should leave them, because you want that plant to grow and produce a nice root system so that the spears that come up the next year will be much better. And so, you know, a little extra fertilizer. Asparagus is one of the few vegetables that you can use a little bit more nitrogen on to push it, because you're not eating the fruiting part of it, you're eating the vegetative part. So, you know, fertilizing with a little more nitrogen, watering when it gets hot hot and dry will make those plants grow much faster, and you may get some spears that you can cut the second year after you've planted it.
And you like Millennial, the new variety.
Yeah, Millennium is a
Millennium.
New variety, yep.
Yeah.
We also have two other male-dominated varieties, plus the really old variety, Mary Washington, which is the one that most people have, because it's been in the catalog almost the whole time the catalog has been there. So
there we go. Thanks, Tom.
I've had the Jersey Knight hybrid and the Purple Passion, which I really love the Purple Passion, because it has more of a sweeter kind of a
nutty taste to it.
Yeah, it's a really good raw too. It's one of the best raws. But I was reading that this new one, I don't have a seed catalog, I'm driving down the highway now, but it was recommended that it would.
Yeah, it's
a, like a it's third as, more spears.
Yep, it's at least as good or better than the Jersey Knight.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Thomas. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Bob in Oshkosh next. Bob, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a question on rhubarb.
Okay.
I have a clump of rhubarb that I've been trying to split apart.
Yep.
And how should I say this? I give it to other people, and it just won't take off.
Okay.
Rhubarb. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Now, I'm not a real good gardener. Right,
yep.
But I try to prepare my soil.
Yep,
and I'm still not having any luck. It grows in its clump, but that's it.
Okay. Well, rhubarb is a heavy feeder. It likes to have a very rich soil, and it also likes to have full sunlight. You know, that's the way it grows, and. So if you've got it planted where it's shaded most of the day, or you've got it in a very poor soil, that could cause the rhubarb not to grow. Now, dividing rhubarb, what you want to do is if you've got a big clump of rhubarb, what you do is take a sharp shovel and drive it right down in the middle of the clump and dig half of the clump out. And I always tell people to throw it away, because if you divide it and give it to your neighbors, you're trying to put us out of business. But if you do divide it, you want to have at least one or two eyes. You know, the knobby things on the top of a rhubarb clump are eyes, and that's where the leaves will come from. And so you want the rhubarb root itself probably an inch below the soil, so that crown is just barely covered. And then you do the division in early spring before the plant starts to grow too vigorously, or you can also do it in the fall.
Okay. There we go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Dick Zondag of Jung Seed Company, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Next week on Garden Talk, UW Extension Specialist Laura Jowell will be back with us. So you can join us for Garden Talk at 11 on Friday, 7 on Saturday morning, or online at any time. Right now, visiting with Dick Zondag of Jung Seed Company. Great to have Dick back. It's been a long time. I'm really pleased to have him back. And you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234, email at ideas@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page. Patrick in Madison up next. Hi, Patrick. What did I do? I pushed the wrong button. Patrick, now I think we've got you up.
Good morning. Quick question around the importance of crop rotation. With the ground covered by snow, can't really work in the dirt too much.
Right.
It provides great opportunity to do planting. And I've heard different theories. Some say it's really important to rotate your crops. Others say that's poppycock. Nature doesn't rotate its crops. What's your guys' thoughts?
Rotation is essential. There are a lot of root diseases that if you like verticillium wilt or fusarium wilt in tomatoes, it's a soil-borne disease, and if you plant your tomatoes in the same spot year after year after year, if you get that disease, it will build up in the soil and it will be impossible to grow tomatoes. So I would say with most vegetables, if you grow them in the same spot for a couple years, that's fine. The one thing that I recommend is that you plant the taller vegetables in the back part of the garden and the shorter ones so that they don't shade each other, but you try to rotate them. We actually have a really good software program that we sell in the catalog. That's something that we didn't write, but actually written by a guy from the UK, and queries all of the weather stations all over the world, I guess, actually.
Oh, man.
And it tells you exactly when you should start certain vegetables and how many to plant. And you plan your garden, and it keeps track of what you did last year and the year before that so that you do get that good rotation.
That is a really cool idea.
Yeah, it's a very good program. I mean, it's in our catalog, and you know, we get a little bit of it, but I guess we're doing it more as a service for our gardeners, especially if, you know, if you're a big gardener and you like to move things from place to place. It just tells you, you know, you tell about how much produce you want, and it tells you how many plants you have to plant, and all sorts of good hints on it. And we do put a newsletter on it once a month so that we get local type information also.
Yeah, really cool. Thank you so much, Patrick. Appreciate your call. Let's go back to the phones and to Gareth in Madison next. Gareth, let's see if I can get you on. Am I getting one? Oh, wrong one. There, I'm pushing buttons here for those listening, and I finally pushed the right button. Hi, Gareth.
Well, good morning, and thank you for pushing the right button.
Okay.
I have a question on soil amendment.
Sure.
I have read that if you have a clay soil, you shouldn't try to take the soil and bring it to a loam. Instead, you should just pile over the top. But if I really wanted, if I was dead set on trying to do that, what would be the best way to achieve the result?
Okay, what I would do, and if you've got a heavy soil, you have to do a lot to get it to the right place. I mean, what I would recommend is maybe 4 or 5 inches of a very sharp sand on top of it, and then as much organic matter as you can get, and then work it down probably 8 to 10 inches deep so that you get good soil drainage, because you don't want to have layers of soil, because if you do, then it impedes the soil drainage. But if you put a layer of sharp sand on top, and then as much organic matter as you can find, and then work it in 8 to 10 inches, you'll have a much better soil. And then every year, don't burn or put the leaves on the curb for somebody to take away, because that's a really good source of organic matter, and just compost it. And you compost by just mowing the leaves up so that they're shredded, and then you just take and put them in a compost bin, and you put a soil activator or a compost activator on top of each layer, and water if it's dry, and then some nutrients so that the microorganisms can work on that raw organic matter, and then just add that back and work it into your soil. And over a couple of years, it'll improve significantly.
Yeah, good tips.
Great, thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks so much for calling. And let's see if I can push the right button here. Sandy in Merrill. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I have not a gardening question, just a little footnote for your guest.
Right.
My dad's family lived on a farm outside of Cambria, Wisconsin.
Right.
Which is now part of your company.
Okay.
I have some old pictures of the original farmstead.
Oh, really?
Which is not there anymore.
No, it isn't. Unfortunately,
no.
The house burned down, and
it did.
Yeah, the barn also burned down, and I'm not sure whether it was by accident or whatever. We had a lot of our machinery stored in the base of that barn. One piece of which was our tomato squeezer. When we grew our own tomato seed, which nobody loved to do because you let the tomatoes mature on the vines so that they were almost rotten, because that way the seed was mature. And then you dump them into this tomato squeezer, and it had a screen in it that rotated, and the pulp would come out one end and the seed would drop into a vat. And then that juice with the seed would go into a 55-gallon drum for 4 or 5 days, and then you just washed it with water, and the seed would go to the bottom, and all the other stuff would come off the top. But it was a pretty smelly mess by the time you got through. But I think they got sick of squeezing tomatoes, and so our tomato squeezer was a casualty of that barn fire.
Oh, okay. I believe the milk house is still there.
Yep. There are a couple of buildings there. There's a shed and, I think what you'd call the milk house. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it was called the Byard Farm. And
yep.
The next time we are down in Cambria, I can drop some pictures off at your office.
Yeah, I think Herman Byer was the last buyer that lived on that farm.
Yeah, that'd be wonderful. Thank you, Sandy.
Okay, well, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm. Appreciate the call. And you can join in, too, 800-642-1234. We're out of tickets now for Garden Expo. Let's go to Kathy in Madison. Kathy, hi. Thanks for calling.
Well, thanks for taking my call. That was pretty quick. I have a comment and a question.
Okay.
The fellow with the rhubarb problem, I wondered if he had any walnut trees in his
That walnuts
area.
Walnuts can be a big problem for almost anything in the garden.
Right. Well, many things, my lettuce and stuff does fine, greeny things like that. But anyway, I tried rhubarb in my backyard because I love it, but it lived for like a year or so, and it died off, and I figured that was the problem.
Walnut trees, any walnuts or butternuts or anything in that juglan family, the naturally occurring herbicide that comes out of the leaves
right.
and the roots and everything else will control anything that grows underneath, or almost anything that grows underneath it.
Right. So I have to grow my tomatoes in pots as well.
Okay.
And I have, and they do fine in about a 5-gallon bucket or so.
Right.
And my question was, I wish to reuse a lot of that old soil.
Okay.
I have a big barrel in the basement and stuff. So some of it I'm not gonna bake all of it, but for my seed starting, I need to have sterile soil.
Right.
And what temperature do I need to bake it at, and for how long? That sort of thing, a big tray, a big tray,
you know,
all of it.
I would recommend that you start with with a starting soil that you purchase. You know, I know we sell the stuff, but the problem with baking or with trying to sterilize a soil that has the spores of the verticillium and fusarium in, they like the same conditions that a germinating seed likes. And so it's always a rush to see whether the tomatoes or the cabbage or whatever you're starting in it gets started before the seeds dampen off. So just for starting the seeds, I would recommend getting a sterile starting mix. For growing them on, though, using that old soil is fine. The only thing you've got to do is make sure that you don't overwater, because if you do, then those microorganism spores will germinate in the soil and start damping off. So, and the problem with that is that it looks like the plants are wilting, but actually they're drowning. So you've got to watch your watering once those seedlings start to grow. You feel the soil. If the soil feels moist, don't water it. And then when it does feel dry, then you water heavy and you wait between waterings.
Yeah, there we go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. And let's go to Lois in DeForest next. Hi, Lois.
Hello. I am growing milkweed seed from seed to give away at an event that I am going to have. I'll be a vendor at this event. And I want to, instead of giving away the seeds that I've been doing for years now, I'm afraid that people have difficulty, you know, what to do with them, when to plant them, et cetera. So I wanted to give away the seedling.
Right.
So I'm growing quite a few. So I have milkweed seeds from this past growing season in my garage for the winter. My question is, when can I plant these seeds in starter mix, and then how long will it take for them to germinate and grow into seedlings? Will I have enough time by April 10th?
Oh, yeah, you're going to have to start them right away now if you want to get them big enough to give away by that time. To the best of my knowledge, milkweed does not have any kind of inhibitors in them. So basically what you do is just put it in a starting mix, and once they come up, then you transplant them into a soil sand peat mix.
Oh, a soil sand peat mix?
Yeah, yes. About a third each.
Okay.
A third each soil, sand, and peat moss, and that makes a great great potting soil.
Okay. Any kind of soil and...
A regular garden soil.
Okay. Very good. And then when I'm going to be doing this, I didn't want to start too soon because I wasn't sure, you know, how I'll keep these seedlings alive.
No.
No, I think you can start them now.
All right.
Should be fine.
And then when should they be put into the ground? Not too soon, I'm assuming, because they are a rather late perennial.
Yeah, I would say after the danger of frost is gone.
Yeah.
May. May?
Yep. Mid-May.
Mid-May.
Okay.
Yep. There we go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. And on to another caller, Karen in Baraboo. It's your turn. Hi, Karen.
Hi there. I have a question about growing greens. We had a couple of garden boxes built last year.
Okay.
And I tried growing, beets, because I like the beet greens. And
sure.
I tried growing lettuce, and I didn't have any luck at all. I'm thinking I just didn't get the... I just kind of guessed on what to do for soil to put in the boxes. And I'm wondering what kind of soil I should use for mainly green.
Okay. With growing plants in a raised garden, which is what you're talking about, you need to have a very highly organic soil. You can't just use garden soil because it gets too hard. the weeds start coming up. I've worked with square foot gardening probably the last 10 years, and I have really great luck with it. But what you have to do, the soil mix for a square foot garden is one-third by volume vermiculite, a coarse vermiculite,
mm-hmm.
one-third peat moss,
mm-hmm.
and then one-third a mixture of any kind of compost, whether it's, cow manure, chicken manure. You mix them together. And when I did my original garden, I just took a wheelbarrow, and you don't want to use compressed peat moss. You got to uncompress it and put it in the wheelbarrow. You got a wheelbarrow full of that, a wheelbarrow full of vermiculite, and a wheelbarrow full of the mixed compost, and you mix those together, and that's what you use for your soil, and you'll have just beautiful greens. It works okay. Good with, I grow my onions in that mix, and I built a square foot garden box that's probably 10 inches tall, not just a 2x6, and I grow all my carrots in that. I use seed tapes and put the rows about 3 inches apart, and my 4x4 square foot garden last year gave me probably about a bushel and a half to 2 bushels of carrots out of that 4x4 area.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable.
Wow.
And you pull the carrots out, and they're perfect. I mean, they're about an inch in diameter, and they're just I have pictures of them that you'll see tomorrow if you come to my seminar. But it's just unbelievable how that Mel's mix works.
Yeah, okay. Wonderful. Thank you very much for calling.
Bye.
Bye.
Appreciate the call. And, well, let's take another call. Joe in Door County, on to you now. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yep.
Okay, my question is this. We have a small hobby farm.
Okay.
And, we have a number of different, we dabble in a lot of different things in a
sure.
little space. We have pear trees, peach trees, apple trees. We have gooseberries. We have currants, red, white, and black currants.
Right.
We have a lot of different things. And we grow them all very successfully.
Right.
With the exception of our blackberries.
Yeah.
We have had these blackberries now for about eight years, and the second year after we put them in, we had a banner crop, just a bumper crop.
Sure.
Ever since then, we actually have 75 feet of blackberries. We have 25 feet of the prime gems,
okay.
prime gems, and the triple crowns.
Okay.
And out of the 75 feet, ever since the bumper crop, which was the second year, ever since then, we have been lucky to get probably two 5-quart pails.
Yeah.
Out of 75 feet of blackberries.
Blackberry plants, and you get a lot of dieback, right?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, see, blackberry plants are, although in Door County it should be a zone 5, but blackberry plants are zone 5, and see, all fruit, don't think there's any exception. All fruit lay down their fruit buds in the fall of the year prior to bloom. And so in order to get a summer crop of blackberries, you have to have the wood from last year to get the berries to fruit this summer. And so I think what's happening with your blackberries is that all of the fruiting wood is dying in the wintertime, and the little bit of blackberries that you're getting are coming from the primocanes, the growth that came on this summer. And although they do that somewhat, they don't do it. I mean, you won't get the crop that you do if you can preserve the wood from last year. And that's one of the problems in Randolph. I planted some blackberries there. We get winter dieback on the canes. And so that's killing your summer crop, which is going to be the crop that gives you the bumper crop. So, I really don't know what to tell you.
The zones are changing.
Yeah.
The zone in Zone 5 is what you want.
Yeah, and so especially in Door County where you've got that body of water on both sides, I'm kind of stumped. But I know it's because you're losing your fruiting canes in the wintertime that you're not getting that crop.
Yeah. So we get some mild winters and...
Yeah, if we get a real mild winter, then the fruiting wood doesn't die and... You know, then they'll
you're
fruit
back to a bumper crop.
Yep, it's like regular raspberries. I mean, they're related. The regular raspberries are hardy in zone 4, and so, you know, that you know from the way they fruit that you're getting your full crop.
Susan, thanks, Joe, for calling. Susan in Oregon, on to you now. Thank you for calling, Susan. What's on your mind?
Hi, I have to laugh though because I've been redialing since your show began and the salon was always busy. Well, the line wasn't busy, so I explained my whole issue to this lady, and then I realized I had accidentally redialed the wrong number. So my whole question, and then she said yes, but I don't know what to tell you.
Oh, well, what is your question, Susan?
This has to do with rhubarb.
Okay.
Yeah. My grandmother had rhubarb in her garden many, many years ago, and we transplanted some of it to my parents' house, and then I've transplanted it to my house, and just about everyone in the family has a chunk of this rhubarb. But the rhubarb is a very different variety than what I see other people growing. The leaves are very huge. They can be like 2 feet across, and the stems are very huge. You can make a pie out of just about one stem from this rhubarb. It's so big.
I guess we need to get some of that from you so we can introduce a new variety. But, yeah,
is this an older variety that's not really grown anymore?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, rhubarb, depending on how you treat it, the leaves are not that big. I mean, if you over-fertilize it with nitrogen, you can get big leaves, but then the stems aren't big enough. I guess what I got to do is get your name and address and get a few divisions from you and see once if it's something that should be introduced to the trade.
So, because friends of mine, I can remember friends when I was years ago, they were just so amazed by this rhubarb.
Yeah.
And pictures of their rhubarb next to mine. And I've given chunks of this rhubarb to various people, and no, I'm not putting any particular fertilizer on it. I don't think it's the soil itself. I think it's the variety of rhubarb.
Yeah, I'd be very interested in getting a few divisions just to see if it's something that that we want to, you know, propagate and name Susan's rhubarb.
So, you know what, Susan? I tell you what, we'll... if you would like to shoot a note to...
Sure. My email address is dick@jungseed.com. dick@jungseed.com. I actually have a sister that lives in Oregon.
Oh.
So, just shoot me an email, and we can maybe make a connection, and we can do some swapping, you know. I'll give you some gift cards or something for a couple of those divisions.
Well, I thought maybe it was an old variety that people just aren't growing anymore, but
yeah,
maybe it's something unique.
Yeah,
yeah,
well,
it
sounds fantastic, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Okay,
all right, great.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. Dick Zondag, our guest today from the Jung Seed Company in Randolph, Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller. Jane Rotunda, our producer for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your garden today with Dick Zondag, manager of Jung Seed Company. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us on Garden Talk. We have many callers online. All our lines are filled, so we'll go back to the phones and to Gary in Tomahawk next. Hi, Gary. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, being in Tomahawk, and I do straw bale gardening, and I'm a sandwich eater, and
okay,
I love tomatoes.
Okay.
And I like to put one slice of tomato on a sandwich, so that means it's a large tomato.
Right.
I can't seem to get a large enough tomato to grow.
Okay.
Do you have any suggestions?
Well, I would shoot you to our tomato catalog, which is Totally Tomatoes, totallytomatoes.com. The variety that I would use is a beefsteak variety called Big Beef. That would be one variety. And the other one is another one that's even bigger than Big Beef, but it's a very irregularly shaped tomato called Big Zack. And both of those give you very large tomatoes. Now, being that far north, you may have to, and one of the things I'm going to be experimenting with my bale garden this year is I'm going to put a structure over it. And, you know, just what I did is I put fence posts right down the middle, and then I put 2x4s across the top of that fence post. And what I'm going to be doing is draping a sheet of plastic over the whole structure. Now, I think the fence posts are probably 4 to 5 feet above the bales. And by doing that, it's going to create a greenhouse type effect. And that way I can plant things much earlier than I can if I wait until the end of April, the first part of May. And I think that's maybe what you're going to have to do that far north to get your tomatoes off to a good start, and if you want the larger tomatoes.
You know, a friend of mine, Chuck Johnson, and being in the Tomahawk area, you might have access to somebody's old boat hoist.
Uh-huh.
Chuck Johnson took an old boat hoist, and he's covered that with whatever, and
sure.
And it's kind of a greenhouse for him. It allows him to get his plants going earlier, and he gets some enormous plants. So, Gary, you might look around for somebody who's got an old beat up.
Yeah, it just takes a little ingenuity, you know.
Yeah.
But I think the big thing is to get some kind of covering over it
so that the
sunlight, you know, which produces a lot of energy, will heat that area up earlier. And then you can plant, you know, almost anything in there. And you'll have to have it so that you can open one end if it gets really hot, you know, when it starts to get warmer outside. And I think what I'll end up doing is removing that plastic maybe the end of May, the first part of June, so that it doesn't get too hot under there.
But that's what Chuck does.
Yeah, that'll get me, an extra month or so.
Yeah.
But that bale gardening or the square foot gardening, boy, they really work well. With tomatoes, I train them on, you know, I have a chain link fence that I train tomatoes on, and plant them about 6 feet apart. And by pinching them when they get to the top of that chain link fence and making them branch out, they cover that chain link fence really well and produce a lot of tomatoes.
Yeah, I have done that. I've planted as early as mid-April.
Uh-huh.
With using the plastic and such.
Right.
And so this year I'm going to build like a plastic hoop house over the top of it.
Sure.
For a little bit longer at the end of the year and such. So
yeah.
And I'm going to try a little bit of everything, and I've got a wood stove. I'm going to try to put some heat into it.
Wow, you're really going to go the big route.
I want to grow it as long as possible.
Well, you're going to have to take some photos and post them up on our Facebook page. I'd love to see those once you got it up and going, Gary.
You betcha, Larry. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, 800-642-1234, the number to call. I really, you know, I've mentioned this before on the show, but I have my tomatoes kind of right next to the back door.
Right.
And I keep the cherry tomatoes right next to the back door.
Right.
So when I come in from the car, I walk right by there and I grab a handful on my way
tomatoes,
in.
Tomatoes are a miracle vegetable. I mean, they have a lot of antioxidants in, and they taste great. I love vine-ripened tomatoes.
Yeah, me as well. Terry in Fort Atkinson, it's your turn. Hi, Terry.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Last year, I decided to plant two tomato plants in large flower pots, which I'd never done before.
Right.
And they were doing fine. I'd left for a weekend, and I came back, and that darn old tomato worm, he was just munching away. What can I do to stop this year?
Well, there are some organic pesticides, the BT, Bacillus thuringiensis, and there are strains of it that are very good for controlling the tomato hornworm, which is just a big caterpillar. So, if you go away for a weekend and it gets hungry, I don't know how you'd do that. But this particular BT preparation works really good on the tomato hornworm. Otherwise, just, a regular garden dust will also help with those.
Yeah, there we go.
If you're non-organic.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you for calling. And Don in Menominee, your turn. Hi, Don. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, Don in Menominee, are you there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, good. Go ahead.
Okay, I have a question about columnar apple trees.
Okay.
And I got a pair about 5 years ago.
Okay.
I'm very disappointed in the fact that they branch out so much, rather than to grow straight up like I thought they would do.
Okay.
Now, since I've had them this long, I've been pruning the big branches off.
Right.
And I noticed the various garden catalogs don't seem to handle them anymore.
Well, we still have them in our catalog. But the columnar means that the branches that come out of the main stalk tend to be very vertical in nature.
That's right.
These type of trees are used a lot for espaliering, where they have a flat surface that they want to grow a fruit tree on,
mm-hmm.
and then they just keep pruning it so that it grows in a two-dimensional, instead of having a globe-shaped tree, it's just grown on a two-dimensional, and.
Yeah.
If it's branching out like that, would there be maybe the rootstock that if it died
well,
up and the roots?
The columnar trees are genetic that way.
They don't have
it's not a rootstock modification. It's a genetic, they are grafted onto semi-dwarf rootstock so that they don't just take off, but columnar apple trees are genetically going to be columnar no matter what you do to them.
Yeah.
Would you suggest that I no longer prune those branches and just leave them grow?
Well, what are you trying to do with them?
I just want to get some apples.
Oh.
I don't really care how they grow. I have them in an area with limited space.
Yeah, well, you don't want to be pruning too much in the fall because that's when you're fruit buds are setting down for next year's crop. So if you're doing a lot of pruning in the fall, you're cutting off your apple crop.
Mm-hmm.
So just, if you want to do some pruning, do it, after the flower buds have set and you know that there's some fruit there. But if you're pruning a lot in the fall, that's why you're not getting much fruit.
Hmm. So, don't do that.
Okay.
There we go. Thanks for calling. And on to Judy in Green Bay. Hi, Judy.
Hello.
Hi, Judy. What's on your mind?
Well, I have a serious question, and then if you have time, I have the solution to the rhubarb problem, but that's kind
okay.
of cheap. The serious question is about seed varieties. I've been growing gardens for about 50 years, and my method was always try a bunch of varieties of whatever, broccoli, Brussels sprouts,
right.
beet. Find one that I like that does well in my climate, soil, whatever,
right.
and then stick with it.
Right.
Trying one, a new one once in a while, just because you can't help but try a new one once in a while. But it seems like over the last 15, 20 years,
yeah.
I will find something I like.
Yep.
They'll offer it 2, 3, 4 years, and then it's gone.
Yep. And we have the same we have the same problem.
Why is that?
The problem is we don't grow any of our seed anymore. We used to grow a few tomatoes and a few sweet corns, but we depend on other companies that are breeding-oriented and production-oriented that have migrated from you know, they grow their seeds in areas that have a much longer growing season than we have here in Wisconsin. And so we depend on them for growing them. And there is one company out there that has superior genetics in their vegetable varieties. And it seems like every once in a while, one of our top sellers will disappear because they just stop producing it.
It's starting to happen to me, like I would say over the last 10 years on a regular basis. I'll find something and I'll love it.
Well,
how long will it be around? And it's like 2-3 more years. And
The heavyweight pepper was one that we sold a lot of, and the company that owns the genetics for super heavyweight just decided that they're not going to produce it anymore. And they don't, you know, some of the companies will sell the genetics off to a smaller company to produce it. But to tell you the truth, the mail order gardening business is not a large enough business to, I'm talking about it in the macro sense, you know, all of our competitors and things like that, is not enough market for some of the producers to keep varieties that aren't being used by the people that grow acres and acres and acres of one variety.
Yeah.
And so every once in a while, one of our favorites, one of the ones that we sell the most of, like Sweetness Carrot, that's another one that we
just
sold a lot
away.
Of. They just stop producing it, and then we have to go out and find something that's as good or better.
Dick Zondag of Jung Seed Company, our guest for Garden Talk. Happy to have you with us here for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller, and our guest today, Dick Zondag, who is president of the 111-year-old Jung Seed Company. He helps manage 5 Jung Garden Centers and the Jung Seed and Plant Catalogs. And we've been having a lot of fun talking with him about all kinds of things, from flowers, mostly vegetables, but a lot of seed questions. And certainly if you have a question, I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. And let's take another call. Mary and Butternut up next. Mary, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, and I love listening to your show. I get so much information from it.
Well, thank you.
I've got a couple of questions. I'm a strange person in that I love to eat zucchini.
Okay.
And I've been trying to grow it now for 3 years, and all I ever get are male flowers.
Yeah, you also have in your thing here that walnut trees. Is it near a walnut tree?
No, I ordered some walnut trees along with some fruit trees from Woodstock Nursery, and they're coming in May.
Okay.
And I was wondering, how far away from my fruit trees do I plant these black walnuts?
As far as you can, because once the canopy starts coming with the size of the tree, the rain will leach that natural herbicide out. The herbicide comes out of the root system. So
you're going to have some problems with your garden.
You don't want to plant it anywhere near your garden. Now, as far as the zucchini is concerned, the male and female flowers are on the same plant from what I'm pretty sure that they're not separate plants. So what may be happening is that you haven't got bees or insects working the plant so that it gets the pollen from the male flower to the female flower. The other thing with zucchini is you've got to have a soil that isn't, that's just moderately rich. You don't want to have a lot of nitrogen in the soil, because then you get all vines and you won't get many zucchini. So I guess what I would try is not to fertilize in that area. Maybe plant 2 or 3 hills and see if that works.
I'm trying to remember, do those flowers, those male and female flowers, I'm trying to remember if the male flowers fall off?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
They're a little bit different. I mean, they're not... kind of talking off the top of my head, I'm pretty sure that zucchini is not a perfect flower. So you've got to have both the male and the female there. But usually the question about zucchini is, what do I do with all of it?
Yeah, you know, I know.
It's usually
I never get enough. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I love zucchini.
I mean, we have it.
Yeah, we have it quite often. My favorite way is sautéed in butter with shredded carrots. It's really, really good. So you shred the zucchini and you shred the carrots, and you mix them together and you fry them in plenty of butter. And it's really good.
Well,
you
that add the, sounds good.
Yeah,
add,
it's really
add
good.
Add the butter, and it's pretty hard to miss on that. I've got a recipe for something. Somebody stole somebody else's recipe. It's called Zubeefy.
Oh, really?
And it's zucchini and some ground, hamburger, and it's there's cheese involved in it, and it's really good.
Yeah, I love any kind of zucchini and bread made out of it. You know, it's just really good.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, good luck with that, Mary. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Ed in Lodi has something for us. Ed, hello.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Well, I recently cut back a wetlands area near a lake.
Okay.
And it has dogwood and others. And I'm going to put some plugs of prairie grass in there, but I wondered if any vegetables like asparagus or anything like that would grow near the edge of this wetlands area.
I guess the only thing I would say is, get 10 or 20 roots and try it. I think asparagus would do fairly well there because asparagus is a heavy feeder and it likes a lot of moisture. So, right off the top of my head, I think you'd be all right with asparagus. And, asparagus grows in ditch banks. It grows everywhere. The big thing with asparagus is to get those roots down deep enough so that the winter doesn't take them out. And what I usually tell people is about the depth of a spade. So if you've got a spade shovel, you make a trench about that deep, and then you spread the roots out at the bottom and cover it with a couple of inches of soil. And then as the spears start to come up, you keep backfilling that trench until you get it level. And then fertilize it. It likes nitrogen. And if it's on the edge of a wetland, you don't have to worry about watering.
Yeah, that's for sure. Worth a try anyway.
Yeah.
And again, the asparagus, what's the variety?
The newest variety that we have is Millennium. It's an almost all male variety, and you want to have mostly male plants because that way they don't have to make the seeds and they put more of the energy into the root system and making the crop for next year.
Yeah.
And you have those at your Jung outlets?
Yes, we do. We will have them. We haven't got them yet. We have them in Randolph, but we don't start sending them out until it's time to plant because we have the conditions for keeping them in good shape. You don't. And so, we'd rather have you take them from the garden center or from the mail if you get them by catalog and put them right in the garden.
Yeah. And what time? In May, early May then or something?
I would say mid-April to early May. As soon as the ground thaws so that you can plant without having to mud them in, that's when you plant them.
Okay. Any other vegetables that might fit in there?
I guess I would just try. I mean, peppers and tomatoes, I think, do fairly well. Although with tomatoes, you get verticillium really well, and that's a water mold. So
yeah. I wouldn't do tomatoes.
Yeah, you'd maybe want to try some of the legumes, beans, or maybe peas.
That's a good idea.
It's just a hit or miss thing, Try a variety of things and see what works.
Yeah,
I mean, if you've got a very humus soil, maybe even carrots would work.
Yeah, for sure. Good luck, Ed. Thank you so much for calling. And we have some open lines, so we can get you on pretty quickly here with your own question at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Lynn in Cedarburg emailed and says, I have a question regarding moss growing in my vegetable garden on the north side of my property. This is a new occurrence since 2016. My lettuce did not grow as well last year, even though I removed the moss. this garden is partially shady. Well, I would have known that without even anything other information. Does this moss spread? I have an apricot tree 10 feet away and red oak 30 feet away, plus a butternut tree about 50 feet away. Is there a solution to this? And really, it's soil. Shade,
you know,
and
it's,
soil.
It's the soil is too acid.
Yeah.
And it usually happens on the north side of a house, you know, where you get the moss and stuff. I guess what I would suggest is getting a bag of any kind of lime and lime the soil. That will inhibit the moss growing. And there are demossers that you can buy at garden centers. The big thing is to aerate the soil so that you get good water drainage. And if the if the area is very wet, try growing them in a raised garden, you know, with a square foot garden soil.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. John in Stevens Point, I think, up next. John, hi.
That's me. Hi. Great show always. My question is, it used to have the Peruvian purple potatoes, and now it just seems all I can get are the regular potatoes, and they're purple. I was just wondering if you're going to get back the Peruvian purple one, and I'll take my call off the air.
Yeah. All right.
Well, we do have a couple of varieties of purple potatoes. One is called Magic Molly, and that's more of a fingerling type tomato.
Yeah.
And there is one other purple tomato, and I should have brought a catalog
potato
along.
Yeah.
But we have two varieties of purple potatoes. One is a fingerling type, and the other one is just a regular type. So we do have them in our Stevens Point store. We'll have them probably in late March is when I would start looking for them.
You know, I had planted some of the fingerling, I really like them a lot.
Oh, they're very good. They're very buttery, and for a potato salad, you can't beat fingerlings. You just boil them and cut them up with the skins on them, and they are just very, very good. Now, they're becoming more popular, too. You're seeing them more in the grocery stores, and I know we get some of Schwann products, and they have fingerling potatoes in their lineup too. So,
and I think I still have about a bowl full left. I think that's all that's left from last year.
They're really good, and they're becoming more and more popular all the time.
Yeah. Well, let's go to Daryl in Linksville next. Hi, Daryl. Thank you for calling.
Hello. I was wondering if anybody knows about strawberry rhubarb. It's really small, and you know, like the regular rhubarb is always so tart and big, like, well, I don't know, what do you want to call it, burdock?
No.
we
do have varieties, and I think the strawberry rhubarb comes from having the stem red all the way through. I don't know that there's a variety called strawberry rhubarb, but we do have a couple of varieties. The Canada Red especially has the red coloring throughout the stem, and so that gives you that nice red-colored rhubarb sauce.
Because I know it's not real tart, you know, it's...
Right.
You can eat it right off the vine or the stem,
I prefer my rhubarb either in sauce or in a pie, but I guess that's what I would try is the Canada Red variety, and that gives you that nice red stem. Never tried it raw. Maybe I should try it.
I haven't either, so I couldn't tell you if it's quote-unquote, sweeter than the other rhubarbs or not?
Well, there is that variety. The stem is red all the way through.
So that's sweeter. It's going to be a little sweeter.
Yep.
There you go, Daryl. Thank you for calling. And let's see, Kay in Prairie du Sac, it's your turn. Hi, Kay.
Hi there. I have two questions that I'll give you, and then I'll hang up and listen.
Okay.
The first one is, I got that dreaded spotted-winged Drosophilus, and I have taken out my raspberries, and does that mean I'm not going to be able to grow brambles anymore. And the second question is, how are seeds produced for seedless vegetables?
There you go.
It's magic. No, what they do with the seedless varieties is they have what are called inbred lines, and these inbred lines are crosses that they make. They pollinate each other. The same plant will put pollen on the same plant through several generations, and then when they cross the two together, they'll produce seed, but the seed from that cross is seedless. In other words, the seeds don't develop. Now, if you've ever looked at a seedless watermelon, you are eating the primordia of the seed in there, but it's very small and white, and you don't really notice it. So there are seed primordia in there, but those seeds will never develop into viable seeds, and so that's how they do the seedless varieties. They use an inbred that produces a sterile plant, and then that seed won't produce viable seed. As far as the Drosophila,
that's going to be awful.
I know just enough to be dangerous, and so I guess what you'll have to do is wait until Larry has an entomologist on, and she can maybe give you the answer.
Yeah, we've talked about it on the show, and there's so far there's not a lot.
No,
that can
not
be done.
That I know of, at least.
Yep. On to Bill in Eau Claire next. Hi, Bill.
Yeah, hi, Larry. I had a question about strawberries. Yep. Can you recommend a good variety of strawberries for the home gardener? And yep. When would I want to plant those?
Okay, you plant them as soon as the soil is thawed and the excess moisture has moved through. And with strawberries, you plant them so that the crown is just below the soil surface. The varieties that I like to recommend are the really, really old variety called Sparkle. That is probably the standard,
one.
standard by which strawberry varieties are measured. And the other one that I really like is Honey Eye. It's HONEYOE, I think it is. Honey Eye. It's a little bit later than Sparkle, but very sweet berries, and the berries are large when they first, the first crop is quite large, but it tends to have bigger secondary and tertiary berries too. So, and it produces over a longer period of time. So, the two that I'd recommend is Sparkle and Honey Eye.
I'd like to have had the patent on the Sparkle.
Oh boy, that
I think whoever had that one.
I think the patent is long expired. But boy, it's been a popular variety forever.
Yeah,
I can't remember.
I hardly remember a time when it wasn't.
Yeah, I it's probably been in the catalog for 35, 40 years.
Man. Well, Steve in Oshkosh has something for us. Steve, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello, thanks, fellas. Yeah, just a question. This is the second year of growing tomatoes indoors.
Right.
Passive hydroponics, Mel's mix in ceramic pots. I've got some natural light, southeast facing window.
Sure.
And I've got LED lights, fluorescent lights to add extra light. I talked to a guy at hydroponic shop. He said, "Here, get this liquid fertilizer mix to put in your water because it gives you better blossoms." I don't get many blossoms. Maybe 1/10 of the number of blossoms that I get outdoors.
Yeah, well, that's because they're grown indoors. Tomatoes like to have a lot of light, and even though you've got the grow lights and that sort of stuff, they tend not to blossom as much inside. And the other problem with tomatoes inside is the fruit doesn't set very easily, and so there's a product called Blossom Set. It's a gibberellin that actually sets the fruit artificially, and you won't have many seeds inside of that plant. But growing tomatoes indoors is not an easy thing. They really like it outside. They really hate it inside.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you're doing what you should be doing. I wouldn't over-fertilize the tomatoes, because then you get mostly mostly vegetative growth, and they don't flower. I guess I would keep them a little bit on the hungry side, and then you'll get more flowers out of them.
Okay, yeah. It's called Blossom Set is the name?
Yeah, Blossom Set. Yep.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. And Judy in Stevens Point, thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Hi, Larry. I did try the straw bale gardens, and I called because I got voles in it.
Okay.
Anyway, I know a cat's the best solution, but I live in Stevens Point, and it's illegal to have your cat outside. And I do have a cat. But anyway, I was wondering about the plastic bag gardening. I have multiple problems with my raised beds, including raspberries coming up into them. And so anyway, that's my conundrum.
Yeah. Plastic bag gardening. I've really never tried growing in a plastic bag, although, you know, what you could do is put organic matter in there, very similar to what you use in the raised garden, but you got to make sure that you have enough holes in the plastic so that they drain, because plants are more susceptible to root diseases if their soil is too wet. And so I've never done it, or never even really talked about it on
the show before. I was thinking back to the straw bales, and if you want to go back to straw bales, people who have had that problem with voles have actually gone to using hardware cloth or screen, you might as well say, and you can screen
the bottom and the sides actually.
Yeah,
and that'll keep it out, keep them out.
Yeah, and it's not a bad way to go.
No. And actually, too, if you do that, you can maybe keep your bales for more than a year. I know I change the bales every year.
Because I do, too.
The years that I try to get 2 years out of them, they kind of disappear, and the plants kind of sink into the ground. And so I've abandoned trying to use them more than 1 year.
I just save what's left, and that makes a really beautiful mulch. And
I was going to say that, you know, adding those straw bales. I mean, basically what you're doing in straw bale gardening is you're decomposing the straw, because straw has no nutrient value. It's all organic matter, and so by conditioning the bales and getting them growing, they're pretty much composted by the end of the summer, and then just add that to your soil or use them, like you said, like mulch. It's really works well.
Yeah. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, Dick, we've got Garden Expo tomorrow. I am going to be speaking with a couple of experts at 9:15 tomorrow morning, and I know that you're going to be speaking tomorrow afternoon at 2:15 and 3:30.
Yep, and I've been assigned being in the booth all day, so I will be at the Garden Expo at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Oh, well, I tell you what, I'm looking forward to saying hi to you tomorrow, and looking forward to our Garden Talk listeners. Come on out tomorrow. Be there tomorrow morning early, and you'll have a chance to ask your gardening questions there, and questions about the radio station and a whole lot more. I'm really looking forward to Garden Expo tomorrow morning. Monday, we'll be talking about the latest treatments for Huntington's and Parkinson's disease. Then at 11:45, we'll look at what you can do to be prepared for medical emergencies at home. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.